Blog Talk Radio.
And it's raining outside. It's real nice. It says that the rain is going to go away in the next couple of hours, so enjoy it while it lasts. Hopefully we'll get a nice little dose here, but yeah, it's a little bit wet out there. All right, before we go into this this story about these two professional basketball playing lesbians who got married and divorced very rather quickly, I've got this and exchanged a few blows, if you know what I mean. I've got this story from The Guardian, the UK Guardian. All right, the story says basically, and this is from, looking for the date here, I think it is within the last week. Sometimes they don't put dates on stuff, but it is recent. It is certainly within, I think, the last 10 days, but I think it's within the last week. Why they don't put the dates more prominently on these articles. But anyway, the Antarctic sea shelf, the ice shelf, is been measured, and it is, they have declared that it is now larger than they have ever measured. Now, they're saying despite the Arctic shrinking, the Arctic ice, that the Antarctic ice is by far bigger than it's ever been measured, and this is going back into the 1970s. All right. This contrasts sharply with the continuing decline of sea ice in the Arctic, which again recorded below average levels of ice during the summer. But I do recall, just for the sake of the argument, within the last couple of years, the Arctic put on about 1.5 miles of ice. Anyway, so, all right, but neither one is in danger of melting away totally. But the Antarctic is higher than it's ever been. Now, of course, what I'm going to bring this up for, to talk a little bit about global warming, I just want to put this out there without getting it into this too much. A climate expert at the British Antarctic Survey named Professor John Turner said, it's not expected. The world's best 50 models were run and 95% of them have Antarctic sea ice decreasing over the past 30 years. And instead, it's increasing and increasing and increasing to a record. Now, somebody is going to come along, as the way things work in this particular thing, which seems like it's total science, right? We're just dealing with science. Somebody's going to come along and explain how global warming is causing, I'm just guess here, even though I'm not, I don't have any kind of a science degree. It is going to, they're going to say it is because of somewhere in the world, the heat is on, and this has caused extra evaporation of water. The water's in the atmosphere. It heads down to the Antarctic, where it turns into clouds and then snow and then ice. That's the most obvious thing in the world. Not that is really necessarily what happened, but it's the most obvious way to keep people on the page of believing in global warming. So because it's not really a traditional scientific theory in the first place, because it's all-encompassing, I guess gravity is a scientific theory and it's all encompassing, but it is a theory that explains everything, so it explains nothing. Every single phenomenon in the weather we have heard described by an effect of global warming: hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, drought, early winter, no winner. I mean, you can fill in the blank, right? And even a kid in grade school could come up with some sort of a plausible, yet totally fact-free mechanism of how it would happen. I mean, you know, so it is on the same level of saying that Zeus is angry, and therefore I heard thunder today. Zeus is obviously angry because he's throwing thunderbolts around, or Diana is frustrated, so therefore the crops failed. There's no difference between what the Greeks and the Romans believed in this, because every single fact is folded into this. It's like a stew that has 10,000 different ingredients. So, but the main thing that I wanted to point out to this for you is that all of this stuff is not driven off. It is not a fact-driven theory. It is a model-driven theory. So what's the difference? The difference is they put these models together that are supposed to recreate and therefore predict what's going on in the Earth. The models fail, and then we say, well, of course there's global warming going on, but for some reason we need to update our program. Anyway, we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Hello. All right. If you called, call back. But anyway, all right, so that's just basically it. I just wanted to point out that if 95% of these models are not predicting this, then the models are broken, right? So why do we go around pretending that think about this. It is like if your gas tank and your car wasn't working and you kept running out of gas, and then you insisted that you really, you see where I'm going with this, that the car is actually full of gas and you can't figure out why it's running out of gas. And by the way, the gas meter never moves. But these are model driven. And so when people try to beat up on you at a party, your friends give you a hard time, you don't have to buy into it. You can just say, I don't believe in these theories. And you can feel 100% confident in that. All right. Okay, so we've got two professional basketball players. One is named Brittany Griner. The other one is named Glory Johnson. They met possibly in a basketball court. And Brittany, it wouldn't be hard to imagine because they would see one another. Brittany Griner is 6'8". Glory Johnson is like 6'3" or whatever. They met, they started dating, they fell in love, and within 2 weeks, they were engaged. Within a couple more weeks, they had bought a house and moved into it. The day they moved in, they got in a fist fight that was so bad, the police admitted that they couldn't really even pull them apart. All right. The upshot is that, or a jail diversion program, whatever, one of these programs where people go in and they get therapy. And the person then doesn't have to go to jail for I think it was, I don't know which one it was. Well, okay, here's another aspect of the story. Brittany Griner, one time, the 6'8" lady that sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Incredible voice, check this out. All right, so she's got a voice that's deeper and more resonant than Arnold Schwarzenegger's. Anyway, so she clocks this. She gets in this tussle in this college game and ends up clocking this girl in the face and breaks her nose. And the girl has to have surgery and basically never plays at any kind of a level again. I mean, she clobbered this girl. And so she's just like a truck driver. But anyway. All right, here's a little bit on this. But she is just a force of nature. When she says the aggressor, what she means to say is that Griner hit her in the head with a piece of luggage so hard that she got a concussion and she had a spinal injury. All right, so here's a little bit more on this. I am just amazed at the time frame on this. Why don't they have a halftime show with cage fighting, you know, like between former partners? I find this funny only because it's very dramatic and kind of amusing, but I'm sure it's agonizing for the two people. But that is, they're really, I've studied, and all of this stuff that I've tried to study, I've had to buy books on it, which is frustrating to me because it should be information that's out that you can easily access, but I have to order these books and then do research. The spousal or domestic violence. Let me say a few things. A lot of times when you're involved in domestic violence cases, like I am fairly regularly, the police oftentimes get it wrong who started the fight, but that's not because they're bad. It's just because it's almost impossible to know sometimes. And so the person with the injuries tends to be the victim. The person with the injuries might have been the person that came up and, pushed the other one or punched him in the stomach or whatever, and then the other person kind of fights back. But so that doesn't surprise me at all. Obviously, they were also lying to the police to keep Griner from getting in trouble. But the thing that's interesting here is that the domestic violence, I mean, a lot of women who get into lesbianism do so because they've been abused. There's no doubt the statistics show this, either as children or as adults, survivors of childhood or adult abuse. But when they get involved in the gay world, the domestic assault rate doesn't go down, it goes up. The highest rate, according to some of the books that I've gotten, highest rate of spousal abuse is found in the lesbian world, and I think it's for obvious reasons, because there's a lot of, you know, there's women are more emotional, and when women live together, they tend to be on the same hormonal cycle. So I just thought it was kind of interesting. Anyway, let's take a little break here and come back, and I've got some more. I've got a bunch of stories here for you, and then we've got Walt Ruble coming in, let me just ask you this: we're living in a pluralistic society, which means we try to encompass all elements of society together, all religious beliefs, some people are socialists, other people are capitalists, libertarian, anarchists, whatever. We're trying to make it all work together, and it's not really a Christian nation anymore. So let me ask you this. If you found out that there was more domestic abuse in, say, the lesbian world, would that cause you to change your opinion on whether you supported, for example, gay relationships, gay adoptions, marriage, all this different thing? That's why I'm putting this out there, so you can think about it a little bit. Anyway, there are many anomalies out there to be studied. Well, 6:36 right now. This is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. I just want to point out that for the sake of just letting you know, one of my good friends or a couple of my good friends are lesbians. So, But we definitely don't talk about some of these details. Like every other relationship that you have, there's certain things that you don't talk about with certain people. You know, you don't, if you have a friend who's Catholic, you don't talk about, you know, priest abuse, that type of thing, and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we'll be right back. It's 6:40. It's about 70 degrees outside. It has been raining, although it's supposed to clear up in a few hours. High of 90, low of in the mid to lower 70s. Just a tiny bit of wind today. All right. So yesterday we had talked about liberalism. And I think that people that are conservative libertarian like to talk about it because they see liberalism as this, basically this thing that comes into paradise. You know, it's like liberalism is like this serpent in the Garden of Eden that comes in to cause chaos and mislead people and to ruin everything for everybody. And so people like to talk about it. We got a couple of new callers yesterday. One was a young lady who wanted to comment on why women might be becoming more liberal. And there was, then Rob pointed out maybe the study that was wrong. I don't necessarily, those are three different studies that were pointing out that a large number of women were shifting from liberal, from conservative to liberal. What I'd like to know is, were the women influenced by this, I don't want to call it propaganda, but that's basically what it is, this propaganda piece that came out of the Democratic Party to say that there was a war on women. Like suddenly out of the blue, the GOP has got a war on women. I don't claim the GOP is perfect by any stretch of the imagination, by the way. And propaganda is just a persuasive, it's got a terrible reputation, but propaganda is one way you persuade people. Yeah, but I saw it as just as transparently as demagoguery, you know, arguing for the sake of persuading people as opposed to giving people new information or information. So, but anyway, we were talking about liberalism, and what I was thinking, how would you boil down liberalism? All right, so what's humanism? Humanism is the theory of life from a philosophical or a moralistic standpoint that is not religious. So humanism is technically the belief system of the ancient classical world, which is Greece and Rome. But the way that we use it, basically theories and ideas that are not beholden to Christianity, the Bible, Islam, anything like that. So that's liberalism. I'm trying to boil it down. There's so many things that are attached to these theories, and then what is called conservatism is what was once called what we now call classical liberalism, which used to be liberalism. And liberals came along around 1900 and said, we're sick of being called socialist and communist and everything, and we're not getting any traction on our theories. So they started to call themselves liberals because they felt like they were representing all these good things. But the key word to liberal is libertas, liberty. And so the theory of life that we developed in the United States was classical liberalism, natural law. And it all boils down to basically freedoms and rights that were supposedly given by God or are in the essence of nature. You know, you don't have to be a Christian to believe in natural law. But anyway, liberalism is another word for socialism, and it puts basically government in the place of God to right all the wrongs and create a better world. So anyway, I've got a couple of clips here. Just an application of liberalism in New York City. The mayor there was a communist who went to Central America during the 1980s to help out, and now he's running the city, and according to some people, running it into the ground. Check this out. All right, so the question is, at some level, it kind of boils down to this. Is liberalism, or on the alternative conservatism, more realistic as to what the world is really like? And then you would say, well, how I don't know, how would you find out? Well, you'd find out by applying you apply the theories and you see which one is the most effective. That's the basic, you know. Anyway, 647 and about 70 degrees outside. It's been raining. It's going to dry up. And we're going to come back. I got another clip for you that you'll like.6:53 on the button. All right, so we got a few minutes left here. I've got a clip, but here's the idea. When the smoke and the mirrors are cleared out of the way, you've got one theory of running a country or society versus another, and which one's most effective? Which one is? Here's the old question from this is John Stuart Mill, I guess, is this greatest good for the greatest number. I think that this kind of this assault against the police department has backfired, but check this out, a little more on what we're talking about. What's wrong is liberalism, according to this guy. Do you find his argument persuasive? I think it's a devastating indictment of the president's approach. Anyway, 6:59 on the button. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. We will be back after a break on the hour. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Karen. I don't have time to stay on, and I know Walt's coming on, but for the general public who don't know who David Clark is, can you explain that he's an African-American sheriff or whatever his title is and a lifelong Democrat?
Yeah.
Okay, so people realize that he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I will let him know.
Thank you. Bye.
I should have pointed out he was a black cop from
let me ask you this. It's Kelly 706-9-9-6-2015, the 9th of June. It's wet outside. It's going to be over 90 degrees today, but there's going to be a chance. It's already raining, has been raining, and there's a chance of rain all day long. And I'm here with the very open-minded Walt Rubel.
Why, thank you, Kelly.
And all right, so we've been playing this clip on, before we get into anything local, and I do have J.R. Hernandez is coming on the show.
I can't wait to hear from him.
just texted me and says I'm late, and I was thinking that we had agreed for him to come on Wednesday, but it's perfectly fine. Walt, you hear liberalism being blamed for the collapse of the ghetto, the creation of the ghetto,
right?
And what's your reaction?
Well, my reaction was the ghetto was there a long time before liberalism was.
How old is liberalism?
I date it back to Teddy Roosevelt, the progressives of that era.
Liberalism was born in the between the writers in Paris and London, the socialist communalists.
Worldwide, okay.
Well, but I mean that's where it came from. But there
okay. Whatever it is, the problems
been...
in the ghetto date back earlier.
All right,
than that.
All right. Or as Jesus said, the poor you will always have with you. But America has a surprising history of attempts at communal living. The very first people that came to the shores tried to pool their resources. And it, according to historians, didn't work out too well. And they were saved by the Indians or the natives.
Wait a minute. You're saying the pilgrims should have all gone their own ways and been rugged individualists and made it on their own?
I'm saying that what I just said was it doesn't seem like it worked out too well because they moved away from that model. Now, whether I'm not going to put my judgment on them, I'm just saying that it was agreed that the communal system that they put together didn't seem to work out very well, didn't seem to produce.
I completely disagree. They survived.
Go ahead. They survived, but I mean, survival, is that your idea of thriving? Is survival?
No, but when you are the first people to come over and to establish, I mean, I think that's your goal. I think thriving, you know, building libraries and churches and universities, that stuff's going to come later. You know, I think you band together. The men are the hunters, the women are the gatherers. I think if you don't have communal living, you perish.
Really?
Yes. You think they could have all each scattered out on their own and survived in the wilderness?
Well, that's a false dichotomy. It's not either you have a commune or everybody goes their separate ways. You could have a civilization, a little city, in which each person takes responsibility for their own larder.
Isn't that communal living?
No.
Oh, okay.
Communal living is the pooling of resources.
Of course you have that in the city.
Well, you're
going to build streets. You're going to do things communally.
Wait a second.
And in order to thrive, you're going to have to build universities and schools and things like that and do it communally.
Well, you're very confusing here.
I'm very confused. I think I don't know where you're going.
Well, just because you don't know where I'm going doesn't mean you have to throw a wrench into the a conversation on defining things. The fact is that communalism is not the same as taking on the economy of scale. For example, if you put a electric company together, that's not communism or communalism. You're agreeing to build because it's inefficient for each person to have their own electric company or their own.
Of course, right.
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 So, but that's not communism.
No, but
communalism.
But there is, sure it is. There.
What are you talking about, folks? 5, 2, 3, 14, 50.
What I'm talking about is communal means people coming together for the greater good.
That is not what communal means.
Okay.
But anyway, you can define it that way. Yes, you do have to have some compromise in society to make it together. And John Locke talked about that. But John Locke said in reference to this that we come together, we form a society not to decrease but to increase mankind's and womankind's liberty, freedom.
Okay.
So, I mean...
Well, I don't know about that. I mean...
You want me to pull up the direct quote?
There is... Well, no. I'm not questioning the your accuracy. I'm questioning the quote itself. There is no more freedom than being complete... Now, you're interrupting me. Than being completely on your own with nobody else. I mean, how could you be more free than that?
Robinson Crusoe.
That's right. That's right.
If
your point is that you gain freedom and liberty by joining together, I don't get that.
Totally. You're destroying definitions to build your what you think communalism is. Just because you get together. Hold on, let me finish. just because you get people together doesn't make it a commune. I mean, you put a city together.
I agree. What do you think communalism is?
Communalism is to live in a commune and have communal rights or to give up rights to enter into the commune.
Everybody gives up rights to live in a society.
I never said that they didn't.
If you're saying that's part of communal, I mean, we're arguing over definitions.
Yes.
Okay.
No, but anyway, I've got this beautiful book, Backwoods Communes, that I have been promising myself that I would read. But there's an interesting history of communalism in America, starting off with the very first people who arrived here. And at least the conservative way of saying is that they got together. They had a common larder, and because the same reason that other communes fail, there is no recognition of the need to reward individual efforts. This ignoring of human nature and everything. Do you believe in human nature?
Oh, of course.
All right, we got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'm here with Walt Rubel. Who's this?
Hi guys. How you doing? This is
James.
Jim.
James, yeah, Jim, what's up? How's it going?
Interesting conversation, but, the way I've looked at the history of when the Pilgrims came over, they taught each other different things. The Indians taught them how to do things, and the Pilgrims taught them how to do things, and they did, in fact, grow their farms and their crops and their hunting, whatever they did, and they lived in their communities, but they still lived as individual families, striving to do what they do the best, not being told to do that, because of some tribunal or some sort of gathering of people. They still lived independent lives. And it all had one point that I could probably look at and say it made sense. And they committed, they distributed their goods amongst each other, but they didn't do it by giving. They did it by trading their knowledge and their information. From that, they both grew, but they were still separate families. They weren't communals.
Right, and I guess they say the most communal, the most communistic enterprise that's ever been placed on Earth is these kibbutzes in Israel, where they do common parenting.
And
right?
They seem to be thriving. I mean, I've never been there, but what I've read, they seem to be doing well.
Would you consider retiring to a kibbutz?
As much as you can thrive in Israel. I'm not Jewish.
Yeah, you don't have to be Jewish.
I know you don't have to, but I think I would feel differently about it if I were.
I'll get off on that, but I just want to close up by saying nobody forced them to do what they did. They did it because they wanted to. You know, in today's society, we look at the community as being governed by the government. You will live this way. You will distribute. You will give. You will equal. That's not what they did back then. They did it to survive, not because somebody told them they had to.
That's a good point. Thanks, Jim. All right. So, and here's the issue. And this goes back to this, and I've heard these debates over the Christian church. Many people in this society are Christian or claim to be Christian. You look at the early apostles, they had a common purse, supposedly. They shared everything together. But Jim brings up an important point here, Walt. The difference between deciding to do that versus the government forcing you to do it. What do you think?
I completely agree. And we were really arguing over semantics. If your point is that individual accomplishment needs to be rewarded, absolutely. I mean, no argument there. There is a balance there, and that's what we're always fighting
over.
Okay,
so let me ask you, what is this balance? What do you see as the proper ambit or the proper purview, whatever you want to call it? What is the government...
Thank you. You're always using words like ambit that I don't know. So purview, I appreciate.
I'm going to get you some Ambien so you can accept the new vocabulary without fighting. What is this response? I'll put out the Christian model because there's different government theories,
right.
But a lot of people buy into the Christian model to throw it out and see what your response would be. The Christians say that you're supposed to, and the Jews say you're supposed to care for the widow and the orphan and the handicapped, that basically the people that are not in a position to care for themselves.
Yeah.
Now, what is your view of what the government, who the government is responsible to help?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And certainly those would be the first three in line, right? I mean, if you were making a list. And so that goes back hundreds, thousands of years.
Yeah.
And it makes
the beginning of charity.
Yeah, that exactly. So you start with the most vulnerable, the weakest. You help them first. That has expanded greatly. Has it expanded too much? Probably so.
Well, but I mean, in the area that is expanded, what part of that is the government's? Let's just say that you see the government as having a moral duty,
yeah,
which you clearly do.
Yeah.
So what part of this is this expansion is part of the moral duty and what part wouldn't be?
Well, I think what you're asking me is what duty does the government have to an able-bodied adult who chooses not to, to work?
Yeah.
I'm not sure as much as we're giving it. I think
we need to give more able-bodied people.
No. I'm not sure that we're not helping those people too much.
Okay. How do we draw the line?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know. The question always comes up, how do you do that without, assuming there are children, how do you do that without having kids going to bed hungry? How do you make sure that you do accomplish one of those goals in taking care of the kids when the parents are lazy or when the parents are on drugs or when the parents have mental, you know, issues? Or I just don't. There is an easy answer to that. I don't have it.
Paul said in the Bible as the counterpoint, if a man does not work, he should not eat.
Yeah. Well,
do you agree with that?
There's a part of me that does. There's a part of me that absolutely does. Because that's how I was raised.
Yeah. All right. Kelly here with Walt Rubel. It is 7:18. This is AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in. We've got J.R. Hernandez on his way over. And he's going to be telling us about what is happening at the county.
You know, we talked about that last week, and we didn't know. I mean, we were pulling straws. I mean, at that time, we thought it was a notary scam, you know, that they were just using their notary. Think of all that's come out since then.
Wow,
what I'm
yeah,
saying.
Let's come back and talk about that. Maybe a little bit more liberalism first, 7:18, 7:19, and we're going to be right back. This is good radio, man.
Yeah, I struggle with that. I do, because it's a fair question.
Well, I mean, it's obvious.
And I, every time I say this, I say, I'm like, my parents were doing this. And so this issue was different, which is proven to be true. They tried to get rid of the immigrants and have Americans do not. They couldn't do it. Well, that is a huge segregation. I don't want to, where you want to put it, in two generations, and my generation, my parents.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly?
Yeah.
Are you on air or anything like that?
Not right this second. Who's this?
This is Shelley Nicholshaw. I've been trying to get hold of you. Pam Wolf referred me to you.
Do you have a number?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a number?
524-8209.
Hold on 1 second. It's what?
524-8209.
524-8209?
Yes.
And your first name?
I'm Shelley.
Shelley, I'll call you. You want me to call you after the show?
Yes, please do.
Okay, thank you, Shelley.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you bye.
That is infuriating. And what gets the left in trouble is there tends to be this real condescending approach to interacting with folks. It's like, who named you God? This? I mean, why can't we debate it as opposed to telling me this is the job of the government? If I disagree with you, I'm an idiot. I mean, that's what breaks down a lot of these discussions.
Yeah. But I think it works both ways.
Condescending? Really? I'm going to have to look at this. What did your parents believe when you were growing up? Were they religious at all, or?
Mom wasn't.
What church? old line, or I guess it would be old line. Old line is the more liberal, the one that has, like, you know, gays in the club. And
yeah.
Well, there's two different types of Presbyterianism. Presbyterianism is the church most closely related to Calvin. So those old Reformed Presbyterians were, and they're still around, some of them, but the church mostly became more liberal. So, and I would assume your mom would probably go more.
Kelly here at talking to Walt Rubel. Okay, so Walt, how do you define liberal? The term liberal, does it mean anything to you? Do you
no.
use it in conversation?
No. All right,
how do you define what you or some of the people that you know believe? What is the cachet term? What is the...
Well, when you say me and some of... I don't know. I mean...
I am a blank.
Certainly progressive is the term that people
okay.
who used to be called liberals now say.
All right, all right. Okay, all right. Progressive. So the progressive movement mm-hmm. tried to make the country and the world a better place.
Every movement tries to make the country and the world a better place.
Even Nazism, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, who sets out saying, boy, we're going to really screw things up?
Well, I guess I wouldn't necessarily agree with that 100% just because... There are some movements that are out to purify, or they're out to, you know, like their goal isn't to make the world a better place. They might hope that the effect of their group makes the world a better place, but the progressive movement, its purpose was to like make child labor laws fair,
right? That's right.
Put in the FDA. And put in a national park system. They're very specific. Get rid of alcohol. Very specific ways of making the world a better place.
Helping the farmers who were getting killed by the railroads and the grain silos.
Okay.
Things like that.
So what part of the – what is a modern progressive believe? What I mean
– Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. I'm their spokesperson, but I guess the modern –
You are right, right now.
Okay, fair enough. The modern progressive, I think, believes that there are two competing forces in the country. There are essentially corporations and there is government, and that it is an eternal tug of war between the two, and that it is government's role to be a check and a balance and to make sure that workers do get things like a minimum wage and a 40-hour work week and you know, maternity leave and all of these other things
this
that have
is,
come along since then.
This is what is known as Manichaeanism, a god of light and a god of darkness. The mm-hmm. god of light is government. The god of darkness is corporations.
I'm not, well, okay. I mean, I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting that they are two competing forces.
All right. So now, what's the difference between, say, a progressive and a socialist?
A socialist... my understanding of socialism is that everything is owned by the government, right?
That was the old definition of socialism.
Okay.
And I was reading an article recently and said that we have moved so far beyond that. No one even takes that seriously. You can't use that as part of the definition anymore because nobody is trying to do that.
But isn't that because the people on the right have used that word so carelessly? And so, I mean, everybody on the left is a socialist.
You know what
and
I found?
And so the definition of what used to be a socialist has changed, as you're admitting.
Well, it's kind of evolving, but what I've found is a lot of people who have told me that they're liberal, and I try to kind of dig under the surface and find out exactly what it means to them to be liberal,
right.
What they believe. A lot of these people buy into the tenets of modern socialism without the government coming in and taking mm-hmm. all property
rights
away, that they would buy into the... Basically, redistribution of wealth, less rights of individual, more rights for government.
I think that's right, and I think that is the rational response to what has happened over the last 15 or 20 years.
How so?
The rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. The amount of wealth being owned by the 1% versus the, you know, the 99%. I mean, it keeps... That imbalance keeps growing every year, and as long as that's the case, you are going to have a clamoring for a redistribution of wealth.
Okay, so a redistribution of wealth, but I mean, this is where kind of the rubber hits the road. All right, so I was saying that, you know, that what gets conservatives upset is this idea that it's the government's job to give people who don't work money.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, that gets me upset too. You know, maybe not as upset, but that doesn't seem right to me either. The idea that I can work, but I'm going to sit at home today and collect a paycheck from the government instead. I got issues with that.
All right. So, but you're opposed to it.
Yeah. Every situation is different. And I understand that there have been a lot of people laid off through no fault of their own who have been paying into an uninsurance fund for many years. They have a right to tap into that fund. I get that. There are people abusing the system. I want to see those people stop. How do you stop those people and still protect? I mean, I just don't think that is as simple and as easy as people on the right sometimes make it sound.
Okay. But, all right, so do you think that the people who are the 1% should have a significant portion of their wealth taken away from them and redistributed?
Not taken away and redistributed, but I think the rules should be changed. I don't think investment should be taxed at a lower rate than earning. I think that work should be valued more than playing the stock market.
That is work. The way you just put that is Marx's value theory of labor.
Okay, then I guess I'm a Marxist on that one. I mean, you keep throwing these labels at it. Every time I say something, you're a this and you're a that.
Well, I mean, people want to know, they want to know what other people stand for, and it is something that has come up. I think people on the left especially get upset when they're labeled because they see themselves as unique.
Well, let me ask you about the point. Why do you disagree
that
labor should be taxed at a higher rate than
the
income.
Problem with that
investment.
This,
I mean,
this is the traditional criticism of Marx's theory: is that one person is a lot more efficient with his labor than another person, and why would you pay them the same?
That has nothing to do with investment.
Well, no, what I'm saying is,
I'm not saying you pay a doctor the same as you pay a plumber. What I'm saying is, do you tax investment? Do you tax the stock market? Do you give the Wall Street guys a lower tax rate than you give the
working
guys?
Well, here's the question: what would tend to produce more wealth for society in general? Because
I think the workers, I think the Wall Street guys just shuffle it around. I think they make wealth for themselves, but I think they siphon it out. But I think,
well, somebody must be creating wealth somewhere.
Oh, of course.
It's just the workers.
Well,
does the term worker mean anyway?
To me, it means the guy who goes, or the guy or the gal who goes to work every day.
Blue collar.
It doesn't mean No. It doesn't matter what your collar is, but it doesn't mean inheriting a trust fund and having doing nothing but letting your broker roll that over and not paying for anything.
Is it immoral to inherit wealth?
It's not immoral. It should just be taxed at a higher level than labor. That doesn't make it immoral.
Why? I don't.
Because we should value labor more than we should value trust.
All right, this taps into this idea that Marx had. That labor is in and of itself it nobler or needs to be rewarded, whereas another person who comes along, maybe Adam Smith talking to Karl Marx, saying, why would you reward the one person for being inefficient instead of, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
why
I
not?
Don't. You're assuming that labor is inefficient, and you're assuming that my argument that is all labor should be paid the same, and that's not what I'm saying.
All right, folks, talking to Walt Rubel, who's feeling a little exasperated right now. 7:31. Oh, we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
Sorry about you guys again. This is Jim.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, when you have the situation where an inheritance is passed down, we have to look at where that inheritance started from. It wasn't done because it was cheated. The person that made the ability to hand that down was taxed at whatever rate. He was taxed that. He paid his fair share. He did everything according to the government. Now, he passes away and passes that down. And, Walt, let me ask you a question. Are you saying that now that something has already been taxed and other than fair should now be taxed again, like Social Security, which you now get is some money that's been taxed, and now you're going to get taxed on it again?
Well, I assume you're asking me about the estate tax. And, you know, when you look at how many people are exempt from that, I don't have a problem at all with the tax. I mean, the only people who are paying that, I think, are individuals making $1.5 million and couples making $3 million. So,
what difference does that make?
It makes a huge difference.
Tell me why.
Well, because if you are getting more than $3 million passed down to you through nothing more than the random lottery of who you were born to, in my opinion, you have an obligation to pay a little bit more of that back than somebody who is getting, you know, $40,000 passed down to them.
Why?
Okay, now, I like your premise, and I'm going to reverse that around. Somebody's born into a poor family. Is that their fault?
Nobody's fault either way.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So if you say that somebody that randomly was born into a rich family, they inherited it, I can throw that back and say the same people that are born into a poor family have the same ability to go out and work and earn a living. Now, look at the athletes today. You know, they have this racial divide among people. Most of the athletes today in many sports are black, but huge, huge, tremendous amounts. You look at the stands of white people cheering them on. Well, they came from where they came from because they wanted to be what they wanted to be. If they could have stayed there and collected the, you know, the unemployment check, but they chose not to do that. And if you notice that those that aren't in sports, maybe went into politics or went to the Supreme Court, they are ridiculed because they aren't going along with the system. And that system, therefore, is the same system to me that supports the ability of a family to be able to, you know, get
Jim,
a check that didn't work, and
Jim,
or the same system
Jim,
says, hey,
Jim,
you were born
Jim,
into a family that had a lot of money.
Jim.
And therefore, this is yours.
Jim,
why should that person be penalized because he was born
into
that family?
All right, Jim, we've got
to
go.
Like
I've
got
to take a break here. Thanks for the call, folks. If you call up, I know that you're going to get wound up in your point, but don't hold us hostage. Let me interact with you a little bit. The point is made that we shouldn't value or punish wealth. We shouldn't treat wealth as if it were a disease. And Kelly O'Connell here with Walt Rubel. I'm supposed to have J.R. Hernandez come in, but it looks like the weather has slowed him down, so I don't know if he's going to make it. We'll try to get him back on soon if he can't make it. 7:34. This is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. And it's about 70 degrees outside. It's been raining. It's supposed to be raining off and on for the rest of the day. High around 90 to mid 90s. Low around 70. And we've got Walt Rubel here. Now, Walt, let's talk about this situation down in county. And by the way, J.R. Hernandez is not going to be able to make it this morning because of the rain, but we're going to try to get him back on tomorrow. But anyway, what do we know now about the county that we didn't know, say, a week ago?
So much. I mean, last time we were talking about this, we thought it was just this, you know, scam where, you know, some nebulous thing out of Mexico where they were using their notary. And I thought, well, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense. There are notaries all over town. Why would you have to go to the clerk's office to do that? Well, what we have found out since then is that they were culling, not they, there was apparently just one person who was doing this, but she was culling the voter rolls, looking specifically for 19-year-olds.
1995, why was that?
I have no idea. I mean, that part of it is just bizarre to me.
It's like some out of a movie.
I mean, maybe they had a 19-year-old kid that they were going to use to cash all the checks. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. But there's still a lot of this that's going to come out in court, I'm sure. But essentially, what she was doing, apparently, was she was coming in early, and she was by hand going through all the voter rolls, looking for all the voters she could find within those specific dates for their birthdays, and then writing those names down and turning them into her contact in Mexico, who was somehow using those in an identity theft, you know, scheme to cash tax rebate checks.
How much money did they make from this thing?
Once again, I'm not clear on that.
What if it would be in the ballpark of, do we have any clue whatsoever?
I really don't. But it was a massive scheme, and my understanding is that there was part of it going on in El Paso as well. And so once again, I don't think it was spearheaded from here. I don't think she, but she certainly was doing more than just notarizing these things. And so, at the same, you know, and at the same time this happened, we had the other person get fired over the food stamps issue at the county clerk's office. And so, you know, let me say this up front. I like Lynn Ellens. I remember when Ruben Ceballos was the clerk and he was facing criminal charges, not because he was corrupt, but just because he was so inept. And I think that Lynn has brought a level of professionalism to our elections that didn't exist before he was there. But there is a lot to answer for here.
What do you see? What do you see as the biggest red flags in this thing from the perspective of Lynn Ellens?
Well, I don't know enough, and I want to learn, because one of the people who works at the Sun News used to work at the clerk's office, and I haven't had a chance to talk to her yet. But I don't know enough right now about how the office dynamics. Were they in cubicles? Were, you know?
You think it was like, what's the TV show, The Office?
I don't know. I haven't seen that show. But what I'm saying is, we know that at least three people, well, four, including JR. So at least four people were in on this.
You're saying JR was in on this?
No, JR knew. JR, my understanding, was asked to be in on. Thanks for that correction. No, he was asked to be in.
Okay.
So at least four people knew about it, and JR apparently reported it.
Now, how long ago was it reported till it
well,
was?
He did. Well, now let me correct myself again. JR reported it to the police. He didn't report it to Lynn Ellens.
All right. So you're saying in effect that Lynn Ellens either knew and didn't do anything or should have known about it, and because he was not really tending to his duties.
Yeah, and I don't believe that he knew and didn't do anything.
But some people are saying, and whether it's true or not, and somebody called up last week and challenged me on this, everybody has to have the basically innocent until proved guilty. But I really think that's a legal doctrine that is in the justice system. I think what the person really meant, and I actually threw this out to him, and they said, no, it's innocent until proven guilty. I think the standard is one of charity, that you don't assume someone is guilty until it's proven as a form of politeness and charity, but that people are not innocent until proven guilty in the court of public opinion if you know they're guilty, even if they got off on a technicality. You see what I mean?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Talking to Walt Rubel about this very, very interesting situation down at the county, in which a number of people have been arrested, and it appears, according to Walt and others, that there's more going on. So we're going to come back and talk about that a little bit more, and J.R. Hernandez is not going to be on today. We'll try to get him on tomorrow. It's about 70 degrees outside. It stopped raining, at least outside of the studio. I'm here with Walt Rubel. We're talking about the county, what happened on Lynn Ellens' watch.
Yeah.
And do you think there's what percentage or what you think there's a fair number of people out there that would like Lynn to resign?
No, probably so. As we were talking in the break, I think the fact that JR got fired, fire the whistleblower.
That was just seems almost like so much of this seems like it's out of a movie. And I mean, if you want to do something that's cliche that makes you look terrible, you fire the whistleblower, right?
That's exactly
right. But I don't understand Julie Brown getting sent in to do this. I thought she was in authority. Yeah, this is Kelly. Thanks for calling the Kelly O'Connell Show. What's up?
This place is becoming like Sunland Park, Gringo.
Sunland Park. Thank you very much. All right, folks. Is it another Sunland Park there?
No, it's not another. Yeah, listen, the county has been in worse shape than it is now, in my opinion.
That's not the issue, though.
No, it's not the issue. And it's not Sunland Park, but it certainly isn't what it should be.
All right, so let's put the pieces together that we know. What is going on? Is this the cartel just get, doing a little fundraising? Or I mean,
good question. I don't know. And everything, which is not very much, but everything that I've been able to learn about this woman who was at the center of it was that people who were her coworkers were very surprised that they didn't see this coming.
We've got another call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Karen. Morning.
Yeah. Hey, Karen.
Hey, I have a question for both of you guys. Should the IT department have caught this?
Well, no, my understanding is that she did it all by hand.
I know, but she actually went in. I mean, IT, because I know where my husband works. Their IT combs through everything to see if, like, they're accessing patient records or they're not supposed to be accessing and whatnot. So, yes, I know she did it by hand, but she actually went in early hours and accessed the files through computer and then hand-wrote them.
Right.
But why did the IT department not catch that, nor Munoz, who was making just under $49,000 a year, in there manipulating her pay to get food stamps?
Well, I just highly doubt that the IT department at the county has anything close to that same level of scrutiny. I don't know that.
How can that
be,
though, Walt? Because, you know, that it's the county. They should.
Well, I assume that your husband works where there's fairly sensitive medical records, and I don't know the situation, but I do know that they just don't have that level of scrutiny. There's not somebody looking over county workers' shoulders and, you know, which websites did they log on to. I just don't think that exists.
It would be interesting, though, you know, when you guys do your reporting, if you could ask that question of the county IT department, because I'd be very interested in knowing. And, you know, the other thing that has come out that other staff has been saying is that Mr. Allens was rarely in the office.
How do you know that?
Well, that was in the newspaper. I got that from the newspaper, from the Sun News reporting of staff members there in the county clerk's office.
That's right, Karen. We've heard that as well.
Was he at the orphanage helping out or what? What was he doing?
He's an elected official. Listen, you know, you can choose to be very hardworking and very diligent if you want to as an elected official, but you don't have to.
I know, but you know, once again, this just kind of circles around the whole Doña Ana County dysfunction with Gutierrez and Allens and what's happening. Because this is Allens' office. This is his responsibility, so the blame has to come from him, on him.
It sure does, Karen.
He might have been washing dishes down at David Gutierrez's restaurant.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Okay,
well,
fellas, thanks.
Thanks a lot. All right, folks. So there's, according to Walt Rubel from the Sun News, we need to have an accounting. We need to have a day of reckoning. But it doesn't include firing, and we've got another call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Michael. Gentlemen, I think what Karen was really trying to say is this is the wake-up call for all companies to just go back and say, how could something scummy happen, and what procedures do we need to put in to stop it?
All right, so Walt?
Yeah, fair point. And certainly, you know, Lynn and Scott Kraling will tell you that, yes, we have done that we have, you know, revised our procedures, that we've taken this very seriously. And so, you know, they're not here to defend.
But not just Lynn. I mean, this is a wake-up call for the city of Las Cruces.
I completely agree.
For everybody that, look, you know, these are good people, supposedly, and they were tempted. And therefore, let's take temptation away from all of these people by putting in the right procedures.
Completely agree.
Very nice. Good point. Got to go because of time. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, we will be right back. It's 7:52. Got Walt Rubel in here, and he is saying, judge not, lest you be judged.
That is kind of
what I was picking up. He's put on his miter, his religious hat. We'll be right back, folks.
This is Art.
Hey, Art, what's up?
Oh, is this the show?
This is Kelly O'Connell, and I just want to let you know you're not on the air, but we will be on the air in just a second, okay?
Okay.
Done talking. You want to make your comments on the air?
I could make it to you now, and then
no,
you could
Art,
convey it.
Art, that was a rhetorical question. Here we go.
O'Connell and AM Las Cruces on KLBE.
All right, folks. I've got Art who's called in, and Art, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to respond to this statement. I almost couldn't believe that I heard. Someone suggested that we're going to impose virtue on the county through some kind of regulatory process.
That's a good point.
But if we remove temptation,
why is that shocking to you? I'm sorry, don't let me interrupt you, but why was that shocking to you?
Because I just think it's ridiculous to think that we can manipulate a situation and somehow avoid unvirtuous behavior.
That's a good point.
Virtue should be and come out of the heart, not out of the system.
Or in this case,
these people need to be punished.
Or in this case, to come out of the art. But that's a good point. Art, you can't get rid of temptation. Thanks for the call and have a great day. All right, so Walt, you can't take your rule book and get rid of temptation or the potential for wrongdoing. That's ridiculous.
You can tighten up security procedures.
And what would you have done differently?
Well, knowing what they did, what they know now, I would have kept a close eye on that website that Karen was saying they should have kept a close eye on.
Okay. Last caller, this is a text, had a point about IT administrator Anna Haynes got put on administrative leave last week. Okay. I'm going to bring back the text machine, by the way, so that you people that are shy or have a voice that sounds like a raspy alien can still take part in the show. But all right. So what have we learned about the county? What lessons can we take away?
Let's go back to where you were.
We got 2 minutes left. We got 1 minute.
Fired or not fired? That's where we were going.
Should Ellen DeGeneres self-fire himself?
No.
Why not? Hold on. I'll just put it out in 15 seconds. You said Ellen DeGeneres was asleep at the wheel. He was not on shift. He wasn't paying attention. He apparently didn't have his ear to the ground, but he's got how much time left and just leave him there to finish out. That seems to be a contradiction.
Well, I always love it when people characterize my arguments for me.
Somebody's got to.
And what I said to you during the break is if Lynn Ellens has to go, Chris Christie has to go. It's the exact same situation. Both of them had underlings who did things without their knowledge.
I got an idea. Right? Walt, why don't you call up Chris Christie and say, Lynn Ellens DeGeneres is resigning, and therefore you have to resign too, and I'm sure
I would take that deal.
Thanks for
if
the call.
Agree to it, I will.
Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Viva Mexico!
Thank you very much.
That was helpful.
All right. Well, it did come out of Mexico, so maybe that's, it's supporting the local economy over there. All right, folks. So I want to thank you for tuning in today. It's been an interesting show, yeah. Walt. Thank you.
You bet. Always.
And, folks, there's more to find out. Well, and you'll have another report on the
there is a lot more to find out. Yeah,
okay, so we'll
sure.
look forward to another report from Walt Rubel when he comes back. You've been listening to the Kelly O'Connell Show on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We'll come back in 22 hours and do it again. Have a great day. And you can listen to the show on Blog Talk Radio.